Welcome back to New Hampshire Today, the weekend edition. Jeff Chittister with you. Do not forget, you can join me Monday mornings at 6:20 to 6:30. That's right. I get up early on Monday morning, and I talk to Jack about things that happen over the weekend. And also, we are together again on Fridays, usually from 7 a.m. to 8 a.m. We are not in the studio together because of social distancing, but we tend to be able to have a conversation over the phone. It's amazing how technology works for us. So you can join us on Fridays as well, 7 a.m. to 8 a.m. as well. Don't forget the podcast. Get put up as fast as I can. Sometimes, you know, the internet doesn't work for me. So I try to get it up as fast as I can. So check out usually the next day, and it's up there as well. What we thought we would do. Hey, Lexi, how are you doing this morning?
Good morning. How are you?
So excellent. Thank you very much. So Lexi and I had a really great thought process here, and we were going over this for the last couple of weeks about the concept of therapy. And most of you are saying that makes sense to have that conversation right now. And what we wanted to do is talk a little bit about therapy and talk a little bit about how we should be looking at it and approaching it. And that word stigma. So what Lexi did is she got us a really great guest, Dr. Robin Buckley, cognitive behavior therapist. Say that really fast. Insights Group in Rye, New Hampshire. Doctor, how are you this morning?
I'm terrific, Jeff. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. So I think the first thing I wanted to start off with is that word stigma, and I'm sure you've heard it, and I'm sure you've either had very professional conversations or just peripheral conversations out and about. When you hear that word and you hear people hesitant to either reach out for therapy or even discuss therapy, what are some of the things that you help explain to them?
Well, first and foremost, I recognize that the stigma associated with mental health and getting help for mental health is certainly out there. It's perpetuated in Hollywood and the movies, and usually makes me roll my eyes when I'm watching something saying, oh my goodness, why do they make it look so terrible or so frightening or the professional so just outlandish? And so I address that with patients head on or potential patients. And the way I usually frame it is by talking about therapy in terms of health. So when we have a physical issue, if we start to feel a pain in our eye, most of us would ignore it for a couple days and say, oh, it'll probably go away. It's probably something little. But if it progressed, we would start to pay more attention to it. And within a short period of time, we would probably go see the right professional to take care of that problem in our eye. And we wouldn't think twice about it. The unfortunate part about taking care of our mental health versus our physical health is that people don't tend to approach it that way. We ignore the red flags of pain. So when we start to feel a little depressed or a little anxious or we're having some other cognitive or emotional problem, we tend to ignore them, just like we did at the beginning with the problem with our eye. The difference is that over time, our depression, our anxiety, or other mental health red flags get worse, most people continue to ignore them because of the stigma, because people will think, quote unquote, that I'm crazy, or that I can't, you know, take care of my own stuff, that I can't manage my life. And so they're hesitant to go in, and then the problems can get worse. And by the time many people start to really consider therapy or start to come into therapy, the problems are at a point where it's going to take longer to fix. Rather than if they had come in early, it could have been fixed and managed a lot easier.
Once again, we're talking to Dr. Robin Buckley, of course, Insights Group in Rye, New Hampshire. We'll post that information up online as well. So thinking about that stigma, I mean, it's pretty tough because it's a stigma we impose on ourselves, and then we have society. So if we get over one, the other one might be even a little bit more. So I'm going to go right down the road, too. And Dr. Buckley is not my therapist, but I have been to therapist. Most of you know I was in the military and a policeman, and coming out of those careers, almost instantly required while I was in those careers to go to therapy. And, you know, Lexi and I, you and I talked about you as well. I have gone to therapy as well. And we're going to talk a little bit about I had a hard time wrapping my head around the stigma of how to gather and
somehow therapy got brought up, and one by one, 15 group of girls, everyone in the group said, oh, I love my therapist. I love my therapist. I love my therapist. And this one particular girl is just looking at everyone and goes, you guys all see therapists? I'm like, you don't? So it was almost like a reverse. It was almost like a reverse stigma where we all, I don't want to say shamed her for not seeing someone, but all of us were just kind of like, how are you getting through life right now without seeing someone?
And you know, Lexi, I think you bring up a really interesting point that, you know, all of us have these specialists in our lives. You know, for females, we have our gynecologists, and we have our general practitioners, and we have our dermatologists, and we have the whole list of ologists. But when it comes to therapy, it's just not who we think of as part of that support system, that group of professionals who are trained in specific areas to help us. And it really does still amaze me, even though we've certainly come farther in terms of the stigma, that people don't incorporate when they list out the doctors that are, you know, in their cell phones and that they see on a regular basis, that therapists and or counselor or psychologists are not part of that group, even if it's just for a check-in. And it's something that I'm regularly talking about to try and get people to understand that to have someone, you know, not necessarily on speed dial, but certainly a name and contact information so that when you're starting to feel just a little off, or when you just want to check in and make sure things are still good according to your perspective, because obviously our perspectives are sometimes biased or subjective, that having someone like that so that you're not just searching when you're in that crisis mode would be a really valuable addition to the group of people you rely on.
And that's really well said. Once again, we're talking to Dr. Robin Buckley. And so when we think about that, and it was great that Lexi told that story too, because what we're trying to do here today, guys, is to kind of get people into a comfortable place to how, one, they should think about people when they do express that they are in therapy, and what we should be thinking about instead of going right to the word crazy. And then those who are struggling either in therapy or trying to consider whether to go to therapy, when someone reaches out to you, doctor, or when you bring somebody in, what is it like? What is the expectation that the patient should feel comfortable about when they go into that first session or those series of sessions when they reach out to you?
Jeff, that's a really great question, because I think that one of the parts of the stigma is not knowing what to expect. So first and foremost, what I always tell patients right away is that that is their space. Whether they're a minor or an adult, when they enter into that confidential relationship with a therapist, it's focused on them, nobody else. And so they have the ability to develop a trust that what they say will not be judged, what they say will not automatically trigger some kind of evaluation in terms of who they are or what they're dealing with. And so getting them to that comfortable place. Now, that doesn't happen right away. I acknowledge with patients that it's strange to talk about very personal, very vulnerable topics with someone you just met. And so one of the expectations I think that's important to point out is that it's going to take 3 to 4 sessions, is what I usually say, to figure out if you're comfortable with that person, to make sure the rapport is there, not just for the patient to the therapist, but make sure the therapist is comfortable with that patient in terms of being able to truly help them and address their needs. So when patients come in, I say, you know, usually we're going to meet for at least once a week for the first 3 to 4 weeks, simply to see and make sure that you're comfortable with the situation, make sure you're comfortable with the person that you're talking to. Even the setting can sometimes affect their comfort level. And then from there, making sure they also understand that it is certainly within their right and encourage them to have that kind of empowerment. If it's not working, that's okay. And hopefully it's a therapist that you could talk to and say, you know what, for whatever reason, I am just not comfortable, and can you help me find someone else? And in my opinion, the best therapists out there are the ones that certainly would say, absolutely, you know, if there's some questions I can answer to help with this, but otherwise, let's find someone you are comfortable with. I call it therapist shopping, that you might not just walk into the very first office and that's the person you're going to be comfortable with over the next several weeks, months, or you know, if you need years. And I think that's a really important point, because what I see is that a lot of people, when they get to me, they have hesitated to come back into therapy because the first therapist or the first 3 therapists they worked with, they didn't like, or something set them, you know, kind of uncomfortable. And so they gave up on therapy rather than just realizing they just needed a different person to do the therapy with.
And once again, we're talking
I think that's a really good point, Robin. Oops, sorry, Jeff.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think that's a really good point because I've had a lot of conversations with friends who are, you know, thinking about going into therapy, and they, you know, I'm pretty open about it and I talk about it candidly because I think it's important. And when I have friends mm-hmm. approach me about, you know, how I went about the process, that's one of the first things that I say to them is say, you know, it's like dating. You have to find the right one that's the right fit. And sometimes it's not always the right fit right off the bat. So don't get discouraged. You know, you just need to make sure
right.
it's the right fit. I've seen a couple therapists, and thankfully the one that I'm seeing now, you know, she's great. And I've been, you know, I go to her sporadically, you know, but I've been with her for a couple of years, and I'm thankful for that because that's the tricky part. But I do think it's important. It's an important point where, you know, this person is a stranger. You're not going to click with them right away, and, you know, you might not click with them at all.
And once again, we're talking to Dr. Robin Buckley, of course, Insights Group Rye, New Hampshire. They're actually online. You can check them out as well. One of the things I found interesting, Doctor, when I was looking at your profile, I loved the following phrases that you use when you're helping educate people on what to expect. Space to focus on themselves and away from the daily demands and societal pressures. Because that, we talked about the stigma, but that wall, that those societal pressures and the daily demands we keep pounding on ourselves are those big obstacles we've got to get past first before we actually can free ourselves of what the issue might be.
Correct. Yeah, I watch, it's amazing to watch some of my patients when we were seeing them in face-to-face setting before social distancing. You know, they'd walk into our waiting area, I would greet them, they'd be smiling and joking, and as soon as my door shut, for some of them, they would just burst out crying. And to me, while I never want to see anyone in pain or sad, there was part of me that always feels like, thank goodness, they can drop all of that. They can drop the mask. They can drop the defenses, and they can just come in and let it out, whatever that needs to be, whether it's, you know, frustration or sadness or pain or joy, whatever it is that they've had to just hold in because of the societal role they have or the societal expectations. That space to me is such a it's to me there's a sacredness to my office or to, you know, and I know the other therapists I work with have the same perspective that when even just, you know, putting it together to make sure when they walk in, it's their time, their space for them to be who they are, not who they're expected to be.
Well, I think that's a good point too. You know, I think a lot of people don't realize having an objective person to listen to them makes a huge impact. You know, a lot of objections that my friends or that I hear from my friends say, well, I have my friends and family to listen to me. But yeah, but they're not going to give you an objective viewpoint. They might tell you what you think, what they think you want to hear. And that's not a therapist's job. A therapist's job is to listen to you and, you know, just ask questions to kind of make you think in a different way. At least that's been my takeaway. And I don't think, you know, that was something for me, having an objective viewpoint, listen, versus, you know, friends and family where you don't know if they're saying things to you because they just want to make you feel better or they're telling you what you want to hear.
I think that's so true, Lexi, and when I talk with my patients and sometimes, and I think this is true for all therapists, or at least the therapists that I am, you know, really respect, is that when patients will sometimes have those moments and say, oh my gosh, I couldn't have done this without you, and I typically laugh in a gentle way and I say, you could have, but it might have taken longer because there's no magic to therapy. What we do is simply separate out the thoughts from the emotions because emotions are what are clouding the thoughts. And once we can help people separate out their thoughts, then they can think clearer. They can make better decisions. They can see clearer paths. So we, you know, sometimes I joke with my patients that I act as their cognitive emotional guru, just helping them find the paths that work for them based on their experiences, not something that I think is right. But they figure it out once the emotions kind of are put in a separate place, so they can think and decide things in a more productive way.
Oh, and once again, we're talking to Dr. Robin Buckley. Of course, we'll make sure we post her information up online as well. And this is a fascinating question because, you know, it's that epiphany moment that we sometimes find when we're going through that process. I think, too, you know, when we talk about therapy, one of the things that I realized is that we talk about therapy as we're trying to deal with issues or as we're trying to realize where we are. But then there's this point where we think we've resolved whatever we thought we needed to go to therapy for, and then we wander away. And there, I want you to explain a little bit why having that ability, like you said, to have a speed dial, to continue the conversation, even though things may be a little bit more tranquil, why that's as important as well.
Right. You know, I think it's so important, and Jeff, the way I, you know, I try and make things really clear for people, so I use a lot of analogies and I use a lot of phrases that might stick for them, and I call those booster sessions, that, you know, people can make amazing progress in therapy and start to feel better and feel like now I'm ready, and sometimes it's a little premature, and I try and talk to them about that to help them make a decision that truly is going to be beneficial to them. And sometimes they're right on target, and it is time for them to end the more regularly scheduled therapy sessions. But booster sessions, to me, are really underutilized by a lot of people. And these, to me, are almost as important as making that first step into therapy, knowing that now that you have the tools to take care of your mental health, and maybe recognize when the tools aren't working as well, identifying those as times to go back in and see a therapist for, I don't know, one session, three sessions, five sessions, whatever you need to strengthen the tools they have, maybe add in additional tools that weren't, you know, relevant in the past but now would work really well, so that they can keep making progress forward. You know, all of us, I think, as humans want to continue to grow and develop. Whether it's something we state, you know, overtly or understand covertly. But without being able to recognize when we're hitting those either cognitive or emotional roadblocks, it makes it more challenging. Or we figure, oh, I can never do that, or I can never get to that level, or I'm always going to feel this way. And I'm not a big believer in absolutes. I think that when we have the tools to recognize when we need the help, and then we go in and get the tools we need or sharpen the tools we already have, then that progress just continues to develop throughout our lifetime. So as Lexi was saying, that in her experience, if you don't mind me using it, Lexi, that, you know, she checks in with a therapist every once in a while. And sometimes it likely, if it's, you know, kind of reflective of my patients, sometimes it's because something isn't feeling right. And sometimes there are patients that go in and just say, you know what, I haven't talked to you in a year, and I just want to make sure I'm still seeing things clearly and processing things clearly. And I think those are the patients that really amaze me, that come in before there's a problem. Again, just like most of us do when we go see our GP, you know, annually or every 3 years, or, you know, our gynecologist every year. We take all these preventative measures for most things in our life, except mental health for the majority of people. And that's, you know, to me, something that if we can change that, and I'll use, you know, Lexi's statement, that I think it would just make the world a better place in general. People would be able to function and interact with each other at a clearer, less emotionally charged level, in my opinion.
And once again, it's easy to get off track, too. We have all gone through this, and I don't want to use a car analogy, but, you know, we bring our cars in to make sure everything is functioning well so that we're not out in some dark, dreary road at 1 o'clock in the morning and it breaks down, and we're like, what did I miss? And I love analogies, too. Dr. Robin Buckley, you know, we're almost at the end of our time, so this is the best part of my job here is I get to ask you on the air and pressure the heck out of you. Would you mind staying over for the second segment? Could you do that?
No, not at all.
Okay, perfect.
Yep.
Because that 20 minutes just flew right by. Before we take that break, though, tell a little people, some of the people about your educational background so they feel a little bit more comfortable about, you know, okay, so why is she a doctor?
Sure. So I made the choice after college. I couldn't decide if I wanted to go into psychiatry or psychology. I liked both. But I decided I really wanted to focus on therapy. And so I steered away from psychiatry, which focuses more on the medicine of managing emotions. And so I went and got my doctoral degree, so a PhD in clinical and school psychology. And the reason that I chose a dual program was because I really believed at that time, well, I still believe that when you can help as early as possible in an individual's life, then the prognosis is just going to be better. And so having that experience and that education and working within schools as a school psychologist made sense to me in terms of long-term mental health. And then as my career progressed through school psychology, and I was the director of a couple of programs with different universities, I always went back to my love of therapy. It's something that I'm very passionate about and truly, truly get a lot of sense of purpose seeing people reach the goals that they want to reach in terms of their mental health.
And so once again, we're talking to Dr. Robin Buckley. What we're going to do is take a break. She is from the Insight Groups, Rye, New Hampshire. We're going to post that information up online. When we come back in the other segment, and once again, we're talking about freeing ourselves of the stigma of therapy. And what we're going to do is talk a little bit about the world today and talk about what we should be thinking about and how someone in the doctor's profession are helping to handle this, especially in the new way we have to kind of communicate. So we'll take a break. What we'll do is we'll come right back on New Hampshire Today, the weekend edition, with Jeff Chittister. Today, the weekend edition, Jeff Chittister. You don't forget to catch this audio up online. Just go over to jeffchittister.com. Also, I do post it out on the Facebook for you guys to catch up. And if you follow me on LinkedIn, I do that on Monday mornings as well. It's that important, especially this topic right now. It's extremely important. We're pleased to be joined once again by Dr. Robin Buckley, of course, from Insights Group in Rye, New Hampshire. And, you know, Lexi, you had a really good thought process during the break. Why don't you talk to the doctor about that, and let's see what we get for an answer.
Sure. So you had mentioned, Robin, that, you know, physical health and taking care of that is, you know, the utmost importance and usually top of mind for people and not really thinking of their health from a mental standpoint. But my question is, and I know, you know, we've seen it all over the place where stress kind of manifests itself into a physical capacity. But what are your thoughts and, you know, kind of your perspective or, you know, opinions on mental health manifesting itself into a physical form? Because I think we all know that stress does impact us physically eventually.
Yeah, I think it's a great question, Lexi, that when it's what's interesting is that a significant percentage of people who come through our doors or who are looking for therapy, one of the ways they come very often is through their physical doctors. So their gynecologists, their general practitioners, pediatricians do a lot of referrals because, again, people go to those professionals because they're experiencing some kind of physical pain, so stomach aches or vomiting even, recurring headaches, even just some somatic symptoms that they don't even know, you know, what it is or what's going on. They just are having random pains or they can't sleep. It is amazing how much our mental health manifests into our physical experience. And sometimes I think it's almost an evolutionary remnant that, again, you know, people don't acknowledge their mental struggles or their emotional struggles, but they'll acknowledge their physical struggles. So sometimes I almost wonder if it's the brain's way of saying, okay, you're not going to take care of this, so I'm going to put it into some kind of symptom that you will address so that we can get the help we need. Because people will take their physical symptoms more seriously and get the help. So it is actually incredibly common for people to register the physical symptoms. And then after an investigation by a professional, you know, medical professional, the reality is that the medical professionals who are really well trained and very aware of, you know, the psychological side of health say, you know what, there's nothing coming through in my investigation, in the tests, and maybe there's something else going on. And I appreciate those conversations with the doctors that, you know, get their patients to us or to other therapists when they recognize it's something more than just the physical side of things.
And you hear that an awful lot about athletes, too. There's suddenly, you know, there's the physical element, and then suddenly when they look at it a little bit more, there are certainly issues that they're not really aware of that they have to deal with in a different way as well. Once again, we're talking to Dr. Robin Buckley. So COVID-19, we're in this pandemic stage. Mm-hmm. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about how are your patients managing? I don't necessarily mean in a clinical way, but how have the sessions been going? How have you been able to continue? Because I can imagine, because I know this is a very crucial time for some of your patients. And so how have you handled that situation?
you know, it's been a relatively easy transition for our practice. We already had an online therapy platform that we were using. We would use it for patients, for example, who were college students, worked with us over the summers or on breaks, but then they're back at school, but they don't want to stop their therapy. Or when people go on vacation, we have a lot of business people who travel a lot, and their continuity of care wouldn't be able to be done without that. So a few years ago, we instituted a platform that we already had and we're already using. And thank goodness, because that's where we're at now. I would say that patients who had never tried it before were very hesitant. They were not sure, one, if it would work for them. And one of the bigger issues was they were concerned about the privacy. How are they going to get privacy in their homes when they're surrounded by other people to talk in that candid, open way? So I would say 95% of our patients tried it, and I kind of use the same statement that I do when I talk about therapist shopping. Just try it. Try it for, you know, 3 or 4 sessions. If it really doesn't work for you, then we can either figure something else out, or, you know, at this point there isn't much else to offer. But the majority of them found ways. One of the funniest is that with some of the patients that I work with, they will go into their car, so sit in their driveway, sit in their garage, and talk to me from their car, because that's a private space, because they can see anybody walking to them or around them, and so they know they can talk as freely as possible. And one of my patients just last week, in a kind of an emotional moment, she actually had one of those therapeutic epiphanies, which was really exciting for her, and she said, thank God this didn't have to stop, because I don't know where I'd be dealing with all the stress of what's going on and not having this place to continue to work on my own situation, as well as just the situation, you know, that's going on in society right now. So it's really lovely when kind of the technology can work to just keep things as status quo as possible. So the platform is video-based, so it's face-to-face, even though it's through screens. But that's an important piece, too, because... Yes. Being able to see our patients and look at some of the nonverbal behaviors is as important as the verbal information coming from them.
You know, once again, we're talking to Dr. Robin Buckley. Kudos to your team for being ahead of this. You know, I'm in online learning, and I'm relatively surprised how many people were ill prepared for this. And
yes.
Boy, good for you. Good for you. I think, Lex, you had a question too.
Yeah. So, you know, I obviously see, you know, the mixed emotions and everything coming through social media, you know, people not really sure how to feel about this. And are you seeing kind of a heightened level of stress in your patients during, I think it's kind of a no-brainer. I'm sure you are, but what are you seeing? I mean, are you seeing people kind of confused and not really knowing how to feel about all this? Because I know for me, I'm right up there. I'm just kind of all over the board with how to feel about it.
So I think one of the most interesting things that I've observed coming out of this, and I've actually talked to other mental health professionals to make sure it wasn't just a biased sample, is that the people that I'm working with are not demonstrating the stress and the anxiety and the depression I really was expecting. I was fully prepared, you know, had all the strategies and tools that I wanted to share with them, but I believe it's because they are in therapy, that they're already talking, they're already developing tools and strategies on how to handle it. And these are the ones that I'm seeing, you know, weekly or every other week. So it's, that regular meeting place where they can talk about it and it doesn't build up. So I can't speak to people outside of, you know, the therapy sessions. What I'm seeing in an anecdotal way from non-patients is that I think people are going, are functioning almost in a wave fashion. And what I mean by that is that they are great for days, weeks at a time, and then they hit a wall for a day, several days, potentially several weeks. And I think it's happening for two reasons. Either there are behaviors that they're engaging in that really work against their mental health and their feelings of managing the situation, or they are trying so hard to maintain that control, and then eventually, just like anything else in our life, you know, they become exhausted, and then all of a sudden the strategies aren't working as well. So I think that's my perspective on you know, kind of the population in general, where we're just seeing these spikes of I'm managing this, I'm doing great, and then, oh my gosh, what just happened? Like, yesterday was horrible.
So. I'm laughing because I'm in that school. I'm like, I got this. I'm doing everything I can, and then yeah. I'm just flat out exhausted, and I'm just like, oh my goodness. So if you're listening out there and you're going through that, you're not alone, because I am dealing with that on this end, and I do go to therapy.
Yeah, and that's human nature, and it's you know, we can't be 100% all the time, and we certainly can't exceed 100%. I, you know, always laugh when people say I'm doing this 120%. I'm like, not possible. But let's talk about that, and why is that need to do it at 120%? But that's a side issue. So with people that are experiencing that, you know, it's human, and I really like to remind my patients. I do tease once they're comfortable with me, tease them in a gentle way, like, really, I didn't know you were Superwoman. Really, that's great, because I've always wanted to meet her. And they laugh and they get where I'm going. I'm like, you're going to have those moments, and that's okay. But it's even better when you have the tools to pull yourself out of that moment and say, okay, here's why I'm feeling this. I know why I'm doing it, and let me try some things to help me not just sink into it.
Well, that's really well said, too.
Yeah, I mean,
Go ahead, Jeff.
I was going to say, I think, you know, one thing that I've kind of learned and tried to, you know, talk to my friends about is offering a little bit of kindness to yourself and just giving yourself a break. You know, I think so many people in this time feel the need, like, oh, I have this time, I should be so productive, and I should be out doing this. And it's like, I play therapist a little bit, and I'm like, I'm hearing a lot of should. What is this?
Yeah, oh, very much. Yep. No shoulds, no woulds, no must-haves or what-ifs, none of those. One of my doctoral students, I teach in a doctoral program, so people get in their PhDs, and one of my doctoral students said something brilliant a couple weeks ago that I've been quoting from him, and he said, I think we just all need to pace ourselves with patience. I'm like, that is wonderful. I think that was just a really articulate way of saying, you know, just exactly as you said, just being kind to yourself and just being patient with the process.
I hope he copyrighted that.
I know.
It was really cool.
I'm in trouble if he did.
once again, we're talking to Dr. Robin Buckley, of course, cognitive behavioral therapist. I want to say that three times. Insights Group in Rye, New Hampshire. We've actually run out of time in this segment. Doctor, we really have to have you back on again. This was just such a fun conversation. But I'll let you go ahead and give any final thoughts before we kind of click off into the next segment.
Thanks, Jeff. I appreciate that. So if I could tell the listeners anything, there are three things to try and focus on to really help yourself. So the first one is stay grounded in the present. Try not to do the future thinking, like what will we do when this is over? Just stay where we are in the moment. The second, rely on current factual information. Make sure the information that's coming your way is from solid sources, not from a friend, not from, God forbid, social media. Make sure it's based on fact. And then the last one is start to absorb into your thoughts to control what you can control. You can't control if there's no toilet paper on the shelves. You can't control, you know, that when the social distancing ends, but control what you can control. And those three things are a big part of staying mentally healthy during this current situation.
Well said, and we won't even send you a bill for that. Once again, we've been talking to Dr. Robin Buckley.
There you are, guys.
There we go. So we're going to go ahead and take a break, and we'll be right back on New Hampshire Today, the weekend edition.